You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 23rd of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I'm hopefully going to finish this Introduction to Nationalism series. I listen back through to the ones that I've recorded so far, and I always end up missing certain things that I wanted to talk about. Like yesterday, I wanted to talk about feminism, and I ended up getting sidetracked and going into so many other ideas. And it really highlights the fact that nationalism is all-consuming. It takes over your whole life. It guides all your decisions, your way of thinking. It really is a creed, and it should be protected in law as a creed. When you think that veganism is now protected in law like that, nationalism has to be. It informs your understanding of religion, your understanding of history, your understanding of geography, the interactions that we have with one another in society, how you look at people, how you look at yourself, even right down to the sort of foods that you eat and understanding the land that you live on and what foods are in season and the ways to cook them, the traditional ways to cook them. Everything about a person's life can be directed by their understanding of who they are in being a nationalist. Identity is so central to everything. The identity that we have as being a part of the nation that we are, and the nation being a part of the wider race, and them all being a part of the extended family. And then, if you like, you could say our cousins, maybe, that are these other races, these other subspecies of human that we share the world with. And essentially, you come down to your family are the most important. Your extended family are next important, and after that it becomes the other families of the world, and it's in that order. And it doesn't mean that you don't care about the other families in the world any more than loving your own family means that you don't care about the other families in your street. This idea is completely false, that nationalists are hateful people in any way. It is all about love for our own race. And the way the world is today, it has become so corrupted and fallen, and everything we have is built upon such deceit, that when we speak the truth about the natural world, it is somehow seen as being hateful. It is shocking. And the old adage that the truth hurts is very truthful. It does hurt, especially when you've lived your whole life thinking that certain things are true and then you discover that they are not true. It can be quite painful for some people. Some people don't want to face up to it. They don't want to accept it. They would rather continue to live in ignorance. Ignorance is bliss, as they say. But knowledge is power, and the truth will set you free. After that first shock, you realize that it is empowering, because you know who you are at last. You know what you are for, you know what you are about, you know what your history is, you know what you are capable of, you know where you are going, and you know what your purpose is. The purpose is to improve their standards of your race, enlarge your race and make the situation for your race better in the future. It's all about doing things for others. This is why I say nationalism is essentially Christianity, basically. It's about loving your neighbor as yourself. And a lot of the things we talk about in nationalism are seen as somehow being bad things, such as being anti-feminism, which is, again, I started off on this subject yesterday. So what is it that is harmful about feminism? On the surface, you would think, well, it's just treating women equally to men. If women want to work, they should be allowed to work. Women have always been allowed to work if they wanted to work, but they had everything done for them. They were able to stay at home. They looked after the husband because he went to work, because looking after a home is a full-time job. Being a housekeeper, keeping the place clean and tidy, going out and fetching the food, preparing the food, doing the laundry. Women that work today discover that it is very difficult trying to do both, take care of the home and go out to work. And in the past, women were kept. They were cared for. And if they finished doing the household chores in time, then they could study, they could read, they could educate themselves. Because they had the time in which to do this while the men were out working and doing hard physical labor, coming home after 12 hours work, being very, very tired out and being very thankful that they had a wife there who loved them and who wanted to take care of their needs while they were at home. So you had the man providing for the woman and you had the woman taking care of the man's needs when he was at home. Also, the woman was there to raise the children, which is the most important role there is to be a mother. The nurturing of the child in the younger years is so important to their full character growth as an adult. It's essential that the mother is there when the child comes home from school. It's essential that the mother takes an interest in what the child is doing. And the father needs to be there as well. The father needs to be there for play and the rest of it. But in the early years, it's the mother that is more important. How women have been tricked into thinking that it's better for them to be going out and imitating the men and working rather than being at home and being a mother, I don't know, because if you look back, we used to have very, very large families just 50 or 60 years ago. You would see 10 children in a family wouldn't be out of place. The mothers would practically be having a child every couple of years. And if you look at the looks on their faces when their grandmothers, a grandmother with 10 children, you've never seen such a happy looking woman as a grandmother. And women today have been conned into thinking that they should be going out working for somebody who essentially just looks at them as a cash cow, something to earn money from, rather than serving a husband who loves them. And by promoting this idea, of feminism, it's hit right at the central building block of the nation, which is the family. If the mother is out at work, then who is there to look after the child? Well, have you got a childminder? You've got somebody that's been paid to do this, and the pay for being a childminder is very low. You're not going to be getting the best people there. Is the child going to be going to school, and is the school going to be seen as a surrogate parent? Well, what is it that the child is going to be learning in the school nowadays? If they're going to private school, they will be taught about the origins of civilization. They will be taught how to think for themselves. But if they go to a state school, they will be programmed to repeat what they are told. They won't be taught to think for themselves. They will be taught all these progressive agendas. They will be taught lies about our history, that we were always multicultural, that we were always a diverse nation. They will be telling them that there were black people here in Roman times. They will be promoting homosexuality as being equal to heterosexuality, something which children are going to find very, very confusing. And hearing about the mechanics of homosexual activities is going to be horrifying for them. I mean, it's pretty horrifying hearing about the mechanics of heterosexual activities before you've actually entered puberty. But these are the sort of things that are now going on in schools. So by getting the mother out of the home and encouraging the mother that she should be working, it's the mother also doesn't have the time to check into the schoolwork that the child is doing if the child is going to school. And possibly a lot of these mothers may not even be aware that that is the sort of thing that their children are learning about. So we have the harmful effect on the children. We have the neglect of the child's needs because the mother isn't there, the mother is working. And then we have the effect that this has had upon the men. The workforce has essentially been doubled, which means that the wages have been halved. A man used to be able to go out to work and he would be able to pay for his wife and his children. One man's wage would pay for the whole family. And there isn't any extra money that is around. Now that we have doubled the workforce, what it means is that the wages have been halved. So if a woman doesn't want to be a feminist now and she wants to stay at home and be a housewife and a mother, it's going to be very difficult for them because the husband is not going to be earning enough money to pay for them. On top of this, you also have the way that this has taken away from men the essential reason for their being. Men naturally have an instinct that they want to care for people, they want to protect people. Essentially, the family, the man's role is as the hunter and the gatherer, the one that goes out and takes the risks and brings home the bacon, as it were. And the man is the one that builds the house, that does the physical labor. Essentially, women are the drivers behind the men. They want things for the home. They want the lovely home. They want the lovely clothes. And the man will build the home or design the clothes or design the labor-saving devices for the woman. Essentially, there are Indian parables that talk about how man would just spend all his time meditating and communing with God if it wasn't for women, and women were put on the earth to get man to do something, to create, to go out and build things. And essentially, this is the way that things works. This is the way that things work. If you have the women there at work as well, trying to do what the men do, it takes away from the man his natural role in life. Then we get to the stage where we discover that there are differences. Of course, we've always known this. There are big differences between men and women. In fact, there are IQ differences between men and women, but they did away with the IQ tests that actually show that there is a difference. So rather than studying things at school which show that boys are actually better at some things than girls, they force everybody to study the same things which girls are capable of doing, so that the boys don't get to actually exceed in what they do. And when we get into places of employment, in order to make it equal, or so they say, to make it equal so that women can do the same things as men, certain standards are lowered for women, particularly physical standards. The physical standards that you used to need to be a fireman have been lowered. The physical standards to be a policeman have been lowered because women are of a shorter height. So then we get to the situation that we're in now, where we see police ladies being overcome by criminals. And in order to make it so that women can join these things, such as the police, they've lowered the height, which means that you get smaller men that are involved in the police as well, and they can be overpowered. Then we get to the military, where physical standards are lowered so that women can take part as well. And it's not just in these physical examples here. It also happens in the sciences. And because we need to get more women into science, men that exceed and excel at what they do in things such as physics and in chemistry are now being looked over so that women can be put in those roles. Women that don't actually have as many citations or are as successful as the men. And I'm not saying this is all women, that you do get exceptions to the rule. You always get exceptions to the rule in everything. There are some women that excel at doing things, and they may be better than most men at doing things. But there are certain subjects that is just not the case. Things like chemistry, things like maths, things that revolve around logic. Because women are better at emotional subjects than they are at logical subjects. Women are better at talking. This is why they are good. They are good at interacting with the public, because they're good at getting people to talk. They're all about their feelings. They're much more adept at communication than men are, because men are more about doing things and going out and doing something. But because women have a third less body strength, they're more used to talking and getting the men to do things. This is just the way that things are. And when you turn them around and you go against nature and you pretend that nature doesn't exist, you end up in the situation where we are in now, which is very harmful, not just for the children, but for the men, the women as well. If you look around, you won't see happy women. You will see women that are competing all the time. And I got onto this subject a little bit yesterday, and I say I got sidetracked. Women used to wear national costume. They weren't trying to compete for the eyes of men. With the sexual revolution, women have tried to make themselves look as sexually attractive as possible, which is very distracting for men, very distracting. And it means that men are walking around in a daze most of the time, and they're not in control of their emotions. We, as men, we get very excited when we see scantily clad women, and it's very hard not to think about the scantily clad women. And if you have that around you all the time, without even knowing it, people are going to be distracted from what they're trying to do. So it's harmful to men in that way. And with the women, they keep trying to outdo one another. So we've gone from wearing makeup, which has always gone on, but excessive makeup, to wearing short skirts, to wearing bikinis, to body plastic surgery, body modification, slicing bits of the body off, inserting bits into the body, really harmful things, essentially just so that the woman can outdo the other women in competing for the men, and also in manipulating the men as well. The attraction that men have for women, which is supposed to be there so that we protect them, the way men feel about women is supposed to inspire the sense of wanting to protect them. But because it gets used to manipulate men sexually, fluttering their eyelashes at someone in order to get them to buy them a drink or whatever, wearing a short skirt in order to get the job. Because this gets misused and men get manipulated by this, this causes resentment in men when they get turned down. Then we get the allegations of sexual abuse at work. And if you've got an alpha male at work, the alpha male can flirt with the females and joke around with them. And then you get the beta male at work, and he tries to do that, and he becomes the victim of sexual harassment claims. And the women can think that they're being sexually harassed just because the beta male keeps looking at them, or that the beta male may not be able to help himself from looking at them. Men, because men are so different to women, men's hormone, testosterone, women only have a very, very tiny amount of testosterone. Men have something like 100 times the amount of testosterone. And it's this hormone that is responsible for this sexual attraction that men have for women. And in the past, it was accounted for. This is why women used to cover their hair. There's a proscription in the New Testament about women covering their hair. This is why in Islamic societies, women will wear the veil, because they didn't want to be manipulating men's feelings. They didn't want men to not be in control of the way that they were thinking. And when men were not being controlled like this, when they were not being sexually aroused all the time, just at the sight of these women, there was much less violence that would go on in society. If you think about it, when you've got men that are distracted like this, men do fight over women. So they're in a state of fight or flight all the time. And it's not good for the women either, because they are competing with one another for the attentions of men. And in the past, before we had feminism, each woman would have a husband who loved her, and that would be it, and the love would grow. In the past, when we had arranged marriage, girls really wouldn't see men. The only man that they would see was their father, and they would look forward to getting married, and their parents would decide on who was going to marry them. And of course, your parents are only going to want the best for you. So the father is going to find a suitable family that's on the same level as your family, part of the same caste, and would arrange for you to get married to the son of that family. You would then be introduced to the son of this family, and it would pretty much be the first time that the young maiden had ever seen a young boy. And of course, because of that fact, there would instantly be an attraction between them in most cases. And they would get married and they would grow to love one another, rather than falling in love and falling out of love, which is the way that we have it now. And we have people, oh, I'm not happy, so I'm going to leave this relationship. Back then, the love would actually grow. And if you look at these arranged marriages that they still have in India, much more of them fall apart now, of course, because of the promotion of all this stuff over there, all these degenerate ideas over there. But in the past, the only time there would likely to be a divorce would be very, very early on in the marriage. And once the couple get to the age of 40, they're really, really happy once they've had children together, and they fall in love over time. The idea of falling in love and then getting married is the opposite way around to how it always used to be. And that was the way that marriages stayed together. That was the way that family fortunes weren't lost, because if the woman was left to decide who to marry by herself, then she would marry the stable hand. And this is that again, that's another old adage, that you couldn't allow women to marry because they would fritter away the fortune by marrying somebody of a much lower class. And that's not to say that women don't have any sense. It's just to say that women think emotionally rather than logically. Men think logically. There is a place for emotion, which is why women are so good at raising children, because they're in tune with the child's emotions. Men think logically, so men are much better at solving problems. And another aspect of feminism is that we've allowed women to vote. And again, because women think emotionally, the majority of women are going to be voting in tune with their emotions rather than thinking logically. So we've had a rise in liberal ideology, socialist ideology. We see the majority of people that support organizations like Black Lives Matter are white women. And this is the reason why, because they think emotionally, when you actually look at the differences between a man's brain and a woman's brain, the bit that joins up the two hemispheres is wider in women, which means that the emotions flood into the logical side of the brain and vice versa. And the feelings become more important than anything else. As I say, which becomes the excuse for why women want to get a divorce, because they no longer feel happy. In the past, you would know that was it. You'd made this contract and you were going to work at it, and you were lucky if you fell in love once you'd had children or after you had had children. Now, I haven't actually got into abortion in this, but again, abortion is a horrific thing that as nationalists, we obviously are against. But that gets promoted as being women's rights. It's a woman's right to kill her unborn child. What about the rights of the child? Nationalists would say, well, it's the child that has the rights. What about the father? What about the father's rights? If the woman gets pregnant, she has given her body to that child. She has created that child with the father. It is not her right to kill that unborn child and deprive the father of his child. And when you see the women that have had abortions, they feel awful about it. This just doesn't get talked about. When you speak to them, they may have felt that it was the right thing to do at the time, but in 20 years' time or in 30 years' time, especially if they haven't been able to have children since, and if they've gone on to have a career instead, the guilt is terrible. The guilt over what they have done. And as men, we should have prevented women from being able to do this and prevented them from feeling this guilt over doing something like that. You know, I don't want to be blaming women for this, because as men, we have abdicated our role and we have handed it over to women. It's our own fault that we are in the situation that we are in today. We can't in any way blame women or minorities or anyone. It is down to ourselves, specifically down to the white male who built everything, set everything up, and then we just handed it over to these other groups. And because we've handed it over to these other groups, instead of conforming to the natural order and conforming to our Christian traditions, we thought that we knew better than the traditions that were handed down to us, and we handed all of this over to these other groups, and now we are reaping what we have sown. And as nationalists, as I said yesterday, we need to mitigate against these issues, mitigate against these problems. We need to network among ourselves. We need to build our own white positive communities where we discuss our heritage, where we teach our younger members about their identity, about their role, about what they are capable of, and encourage them to have good morals and be upstanding people, and condemn them when they do silly things and they don't fulfill the highest ideals of our ancestors. It is much better to be teaching people to be proud of their ancestors and teaching them about the wonderful, amazing, glorious things that they did than to be telling them about the negative things that they did, which is what we try to do today. There are all these calls to teach our children this negative view of our ancestors. That is not going to make our children of today into the best people. That is going to make our children of today not want to continue life, not want to be the best that they can be, because they're not going to think they're capable of it. It is much better to give people a positive view of themselves than a negative view. And the only reason why we are giving our children this negative view of themselves is because of diversity, because of multiculturalism, because we have these other groups here in society who have a different history to us. And we are the bad guy in their history. All of these problems come down to multiculturalism, all of it. I mean, these ideas of feminism, they come from, or the majority of the ideas from feminism come from Jewish women. They didn't arise from white women. There may have been some white women that are involved, but the majority of them are Jewish women. These aren't natural ideas that come from the European man. And all we have to do is look back at our European history to see that and see the role that women have had. And they were always seen as important. Any great man, it is always his mother that is commented upon. And look at the way that we venerate Mary, the mother of Jesus. And what did she do? Well, we're not told she did a lot. Well, but she did bring Jesus up. And it's the same today. The most important role that a woman can have is as a mother, and that is as the role that she will find the most fulfilling. Of course, there are always exceptions to the rule, but we are teaching women today the opposite of what is natural and what is best for them. And as nationalists, that's why we are against it. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.